This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Moncrief on News Talk.
While the focus of the world is on Iran, another casualty of this war is Lebanon. Once again, it's being attacked by Israel, meaning that its people must again endure displacement, injury and the loss of life. And there's no indication of when these attacks will cease or what will be left when they do. The Fianna Fáil MEP Barry Andrews, who's also chair of the European Parliament Development Committee, arrived back from Beirut just this morning. Barry, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
First off, I am surprised there are any flights out of Beirut at the moment.
Yeah, I was surprised when I always see, you know, when these kind of crises occur, it's always better to try to be there than to read all the briefings. I'm not sure the airport will stay open for much longer. There's only one airline going in now, which is Middle East Airlines. So they're flying out of Brussels. Obviously, all the Gulf countries are closed. But yeah, it's a lifeline for Beirut, and it's keeping open under really, really stressful circumstances. When I was taking off this morning from Beirut, you could see out the window the smoke coming up from recent the airstrikes that occurred overnight, which I heard. I mean, there were very loud airstrikes overnight in southern Beirut, and there have been more strikes today in central Beirut. I'm just reading just before I came on here that 12 people were killed in central Beirut in areas where there hadn't previously been Israeli airstrikes. So it's really escalating very rapidly.
Yeah. Now, and at the same time, Israel is telling residents in southern Lebanon to evacuate, and presumably those people are heading towards Beirut.
Yes, well, not just Beirut; they're heading to other parts of Lebanon. So there's the Shia population of Lebanon are concentrated in southern Lebanon, and also in the Bekaa Valley, which is up in the north east, and also in southern Beirut. So they're going to everywhere else, basically to the Catholic Maronite areas, to the Sunni areas, to the Druze areas for safety. And when I was in Beirut, you could see on the highways, people had parked their cars, hundreds and hundreds of cars on the hard shoulder, taking their cars out of the southern Beirut to make sure they don't get damaged in the multiple airstrikes that are happening. But there's huge population movement. I think it's also important to say that 600,000 Syrians have gone back since the Assad regime fell. They've left Lebanon. But another 100,000 Syrians have come in because they're worried about the current regime. So there's huge population movements going on, but it's just rapidly accelerated in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, because I suppose poor Lebanon, because of its position, just, you know, notwithstanding its own difficulties, it's always had a huge amount of refugees coming in from that general area. How would that?
Yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinary place. Sorry to cut across, it just occurred to me, like the Civil War was in 1975, but my parents went to Beirut for their honeymoon, believe it, in 1964, 65, and it was just a sort of phenomenal cosmopolitan place. But it's fallen from a middle-income country. It's rated as a middle-income country up until recently, and now it's considered a low-income country. So it really has really suffered as a result of its location and all of the tensions, the sectarian tensions, and of course the Iran-Israel crisis at the moment.
Yeah, because I suppose back in and because the Christian community are kind of speak French, and there was a French influence there. At one time, it was quite like a southern, like Cannes or Nice or one of those places.
Yeah, the older people speak French to you. The young people speak English to you, you know, as their second language. And so, yeah, you can you can get by with your French if you have a bit of French in a lot of areas. But the confessional map of Lebanon, when you look at it, the different religions, it's an extraordinary thing. The concentration of the religions in the south for Shia, but there's a lot of mixed areas, and you know that's really. What is Lebanon hasn't really got on top of, and the biggest problem they have now, of course, is Hezbollah, who are completely embedded in the state. They're a state within the state. They're part of the government. They deliver massive social services, but they are unfortunately acting at the behest of Iran, and that has brought us to where we are now today.
Yeah, and is that creating difficulties within Lebanon? By which I've read several accounts of how. The general population in Lebanon, let's just say, aren't too happy with Hezbollah bringing Israeli wrath down on them. And is that in turn then having a knock-on effect on support for those Shias who are now refugees?
Yeah, it is. Like back in 2024, when the first displacements occurred, there was a huge amount of local solidarity and, you know, a basic Muslim principle of neighborliness that kicked in, part of their sort of spiritual way of looking at things. But that's notably absent on this occasion. And the people I spoke to over the last couple of days told me that the reason is that people feel that the Shia community have allowed Hezbollah to do this, and therefore there's less sympathy, less solidarity. I went to a shelter yesterday, and the people have been displaced twice, in 2024 and now, and they notice very, very clearly the difference in the feeling of charity and solidarity that they experienced in 2024 compared to now. So it's definitely changed. And frankly, that's part of the Israeli policy. You know, this is the what's called the Dahiya Doctrine, whereby they, really punish, terrorize and humiliate a civilian population in order to put pressure on the likes of Hezbollah or hostile governments.
Yeah. The fact that they want so many people out of southern Lebanon, what does that say to you about perhaps what the strategy is? Is this like a bigger and even bigger buffer zone?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the famous Litani River is where the first order for displacement was. So it's about 25 kilometers from the Israel border. There's been a fresh order of evacuation even further north. I think this is the Zarani River. So there's huge movements going on, but the Israelis have also bombed the bridges over the Litani River. So it's very difficult to get out, and people are very nervous about leaving these areas. But the Israelis have announced that there's going to be a very heavy bombardment of these areas, and there's no exceptions will be made for civilian infrastructure. So, I mean, these are have to be called out as war crimes because that's what they are. You cannot... have collective punishment of a population. You cannot order ethnic cleansing. These vague warnings that are being issued, these vague notifications, are leading to massive loss of civilian infrastructure as well, schools and hospitals and bakeries. So it's really the conduct of the war by Israel is following a pattern we saw in Gaza. And that's really the fear, is that southern Lebanon will be turn into a new Gaza.
My word. How many NGOs are on the ground now, and how are they coping with all this?
Well, I can tell you the actual figure for international NGOs, which is 73, which is far too many because it creates massive fragmentation and, you know, lack of effectiveness. There's too many of them on the ground. That's international NGOs. There are also hundreds and hundreds of local NGOs who are doing meals, who are providing healthcare, who are providing blankets, who are, you know, very basic humanitarian support. But there is a huge fall off in international aid support generally. And during the last conflict in 2024, the Gulf countries provided a huge amount of support to those that were affected by the Israeli attacks. But of course, the Gulf countries have other issues at the moment and they're completely distracted. So it's very notable, again, that not only is there that lack of solidarity across community, but the international effort has been very, very weak. Antonio Guterres, who's the Secretary General of the UN, was in Beirut a couple of days ago. And he launched an appeal for $300 million, which is a tiny amount of money when you consider that $1 billion is spent a day by the Americans on the war in Iran. But he was looking for $300 million and only $100 million of that has been committed. Now, the Irish government has committed money to support the humanitarian effort in Lebanon, as has the European Union, but other donors really haven't stepped up.
Yeah. Well, and one, you can't help but imagine that this seems all very far away, but it does have a knock-on effect on other parts of the world. It'll have a knock-on effect on Europe because people will leave and start looking for a new place to be.
Well, exactly. And, you know, we're already feeling it, aren't we? You know, with the price of oil, the price of fertilizer in for farming community, there's huge knock-on effects throughout the supply chain. But then, as you say, there's this migration issue. So, you know, it's an American-Israeli initiative, but it's Europe that has to follow these military adventures around with a pan and brush that has to clean up afterwards. And I can take the brunt of the damage that's caused. Now, look, I think everybody's first thoughts at the moment are for the people of Lebanon and what they're suffering, and the huge bombardment, the massive displacement, the upset to their lives. But it will have a negative effect on Europe, especially if it's protracted. I mean, the one thing I got from taxi drivers and from everybody I met in the last few days was, how long do you think this is going to last? Because, you know, that's what they're really worried about. How long are they going to, you know, they've got limited resources. They're trying to cope by borrowing, etc. And the information I was able to share with them is that it will be more likely to be a longer drawn out conflict, especially the displacement if the Israelis decide to fully occupy southern Lebanon.
Yeah. The spirit of people in Lebanon must be quite extraordinary in that they're more used to war rather than peace.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge frustration. There were supposed to be elections taking place in May coming up, but they've been postponed. The current government is quite technocratic and it's quite effective, actually. So it's really unfortunate. And people talk to me about, you know, Ireland and Lebanon, you know, they're divided communities in Northern Ireland. But we were very lucky in the north of Ireland that we had leaders like Hume and Trimble. And the neighbours wanted to see peace in Northern Ireland, the British, the European Union, the Americans. Lebanon has none of those assets. It is very, very damaging neighbors that don't want to see peace, and there's a complete lack of statesmanship and leadership in the various communities. So it's very grim, and people are very kind of frustrated about the future. They're very worried about it, and it looks very bleak really from what I saw. So I think the least we can do is try to highlight the humanitarian crisis and try to, you know, do what we've always done in this country and in the European Union, and show some support for the human dignity of people affected by crises and conflict.
Yeah. Apart from the UNIFIL battalion, are there many Irish people there?
There's 110 registered, apparently. I met some Irish people last night in an Irish pub. Of course, there's an Irish pub called The Black Sheep. And so about 10 of us got together to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, I was obviously, yeah, they kept saying, you know, the other people that were there, sort of mixed feelings about celebrating anything. But anyway, we got together and yeah, there's about 110 people. There's different people who work in journalism, people who work in NGOs, teachers. I met another guy who's writing a travelogue as well. So yeah, we had a bit of a chat about life in Beirut. Some of them have been there for more than a decade and some are recent arrivals. And Sally Hayden, the well-known journalist, she was there.
Of course, so. Yeah. She'd be there too. My word. Barry, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Barry Andrews, MEP, also chair of the Development Committee for the European Parliament.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.